Good morning, and welcome to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. I'm Tobin LePan, your host and reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, as always, is Andrew Doman, political reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Today we're talking about mental health in Nevada, a system that has come under fierce scrutiny during the past months. This week, Governor Brian Sandoval and our state's legislators will look at putting a few million dollars into the system to renovate a hospital here in Las Vegas. This proposal comes on the heels of stories about the mentally ill taking up beds in Clark County's emergency rooms. Recently, Southern Nevada Psychiatric Hospital, Ross and Neal, had lost its accreditation and could lose critical federal money. This all started with the story of James Brown, a man who was sent on a one-way bus trip to California after being discharged from Ross and Neal. He arrived in Sacramento with no family support and nowhere to go. The so-called patient dumping scandal has embroiled the Sandoval administration in controversy for months. But perhaps lost in the discussion is the fate of local mental health patients who don't get sent packing out of state. Today, we're talking with Marilyn Rogan, a former Metro Police captain and the operator of Adams House, a mental health residential treatment facility in Las Vegas. She's named the facility for her son, Adam, who died last year. Now, Marilyn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And you run a nonprofit residential care center, as we mentioned, for the mentally ill. It's called Adams House. And could you tell us a little bit about the facility and how it got its name?
Well, it's a 42-bed residential housing for the mentally ill, where we provide services that are all-inclusive, which means that there are psychiatric services. We partner with LifeQuest. So we have psychiatric services, and the good thing is that we have a psychiatrist that is a consistent psychiatrist continually. So the clients see the same psychiatrist and get to know them, and as well as the same licensed clinical social workers, basic skill training individuals, and we have medication management here, as well as individual groups for the clients that are here. And also housing and food and activities for the clients. It's a well-rounded, complete service-based residential housing for mentally ill. And we try to ensure that we meet all their needs and are providing them with a home environment. And our goal is to keep them out of the hospitals, keep them off the street, keep them sober and on their medications so that they can live as healthy and productive life as they possibly can.
And the facility, it's named Adams House, is named after your son. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it's named after my son. I was asked if I could or would like to be a participant with two other people in getting this started, Jeff Iverson and Rich Holligan. And of course, I wanted to because I think that it gives my son's life meaning as well as helps me recover from the loss of Adam, mentally ill and had been for a number of years. And because of his co-occurring issues with drugs and mental illness, he died in April of 2012.
Well, Marilyn, I'm of course sorry to hear about your son. Can you tell us a little bit about him, what he was like, and his history with mental illness?
Adam was an incredibly wonderful human being. If you knew Adam, like I knew Adam and the rest of his family did. He was a loving, caring, fantastic sense of humor, just a wonderful person. However, there was another side of Adam when he did not take his medications that was the mentally ill Adam. And Adam started when he was at a very young age. Probably about 5 or 6 years old, we started noticing that he had some odd behaviors that we felt needed addressing. He would have these little rituals that he would have to follow, putting his shoes up at night so that nobody would trip. He had to make sure that the water was shut off. He broke a number of faucets and that kind of thing at home because he worried about the water running. He had to put up anything sharp because he was afraid that he might hurt somebody with that. And what he also at times was telling us that he heard voices. So we took him not only to a doctor here in Las Vegas, but we also took him to California, where he was diagnosed with, at that time, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, and anxiety disorder. While he was taking his medication, he did wonderfully. He progressed socially. He was doing well. But as he got older and people realized some of the differences, then he didn't want to take his medication. He didn't like the side effects of the medication. He didn't like the stigma that was involved in being mentally ill. And so he would try to cope with his mental illness on his own, which obviously wasn't very successful. And he would have problems where he would just 1 minute, please. I'm on the phone with that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm at work right now, and somebody just asked a question. Then probably after he reached puberty, he started having some real difficulties with his mental illness. Like I said, because of the stigma. And again, you know, in most communities, as I said before, it takes a village to raise a child. There's always people in the neighborhood, friends, you know, interactions. When a person's mentally ill, families aren't really that supported in the village. And the village becomes real small, and the support consists of your family. And that causes a lot of problems with self-esteem and issues with the child with mental illness. So he, not wanting to be mentally ill, went out and would try to fit in and ultimately start drinking or doing drugs and get himself in trouble. And he started cycling through the court system and he'd do okay. While he was taking his medicines, he was wonderful. You wouldn't know that he had any issues or problems. And then he would go off his medications and either voices would start, the anxiety would start real bad, the obsessive compulsive issues would start again. He would have mood swings that were terrible. And that's kind of how we lived from the time he was 13 until the time he died.
And how did your experience raising Adam and working through his mental health issues, how did that influence you in terms of setting up Adam's house and what you were trying to accomplish with the facility?
Well, you know, what I found is that services were really kind of difficult. I was fortunate because while he was younger, I had insurance, so I was able to take him to, you know, the better facilities. But as he got older and I no longer had any control over that, you had to go through the court system in order to get a legal 2000 to get him hospitalized.
Now, that legal 2000, that's an involuntary treatment, right?
And so you have to go through this process that takes several days. And, you know, they're wonderful people. They do a fantastic job, but it's not an immediate process. Mm-hmm. And the only other way that you can get immediate service for somebody to be hospitalized is if they're a danger to themselves or others. Because once they reach 18, you can't force them to take any medication. You can't, because being mentally ill isn't a crime. Even though you as a parent or the loved one knows that the person is decompensating and needs help, there's nothing that you can do unless you go through the court system and they deem his behavior has been serious enough to warrant a 72-hour hold.
And with your son, Adam, when we spoke before, you told me that he had some interactions with the court system, which you found to be, as you said, very, very positive. Can you talk a little bit about the mental health courts and what those are like here in Clark County, what they did for your son?
Oh, mental health court was one of the best things that ever happened to my son. Unfortunately, in order to get into mental health court, though, you have to commit a crime. And that part of it's sad, but some wonderful, wonderful people, Phil Cohen from the Public Defender's Office, Judge John McGordy, Judge Jackie Glass, the district attorney at the time, who's now Steve Wilson, got together with the state of Nevada and parole and probation and the Clark County Detention Center, and they worked together as a in a partnership to develop this mental health court, which was that the person would be getting a therapeutic-based treatment instead of a punitive-based treatment by being incarcerated. And so what they did is weekly, the judge would see the individual to ensure that they were medication compliant, that they were doing what they were supposed to legally, that they weren't taking any drugs or alcohol, that they were being seen by a social worker, and that PMP was involved. So they had this partnership of the whole a group of people, very similar to what we're trying to do here, with the exception of the legal aspect of it, so that there was a consistency and a continuity of care that was being provided so that the people were getting a therapeutic treatment rather than punitive. And with Adam, when he was in mental health court, which was very different from prior, he was able to, there was a regimen of his medication. He had to strictly adhere to it. He was monitored. He was getting counseling. He went to groups. He was sober. And the biggest thing was he was taking his medication. He, at that time, he got his GED, which was wonderful. He was, you know, able to complete school, something that he wasn't able to do previous to that program. He successfully completed and graduated after 3 years the program, and for a while after that continued to stay on his medication, doing quite well, and was able to be productive in the community. Now I'm holding a job for the longest he ever did, and it was about 3 months. And then he started to recycle into his old pattern because of, you know, not having that structure and not having the living environment and somebody, you know, that could actually tell him that he had to take his medications and that kind of thing. And to have the social environment of the mental health court as well, people that he felt that he fit in with, and he was part of a village, part of a community, part of people that cared, that were like him, and he functioned really well. And that's what the whole focus of the program is to help these people become successful, realize the importance of taking their medication, and they help with getting them jobs and being productive members of the community, as productive as they possibly can, while keeping them out of the hospitals, keeping them out of the jails. And ultimately, it ends up being a less costly process than it does people having to go to jail. And not only the cost, but also the fact that being in jail is really not a therapeutic environment.
Right, but Marilyn, you had talked about just now just the numbers of mentally ill who end up doing, as you said, cycling, who go through, maybe they're on their meds for a while, they're doing well, then they go off their medication, they're not doing well, end up in places like the jail. And it's my understanding that you also worked at the Clark County Detention Center. And
yes,
we've heard reports that the detention center serves many mentally ill.
I think the detention center might be the largest mental health facility in the county, right? In terms of people who are on prescription drugs for mental health issues and in one place at one time.
I agree with you. I think that the jails, unfortunately, as well as the prisons, have become the de facto mental health hospitals, because when they're not on their medications or they can't afford their medications, they end up cycling again. And unfortunately, it's not a crime to be mentally ill, but most often those that don't have housing or monies will commit a crime and they'll end up cycling back into the detention center. You're right. At least while I was there, I can't speak for what is happening, you know, now. But I do know that at one time we had about 28% of the population that was on psychotropic drugs at any one time in the facility.
What kind of challenges did that create for facility staff at the detention center?
Excuse me?
What kind of challenge, having that many people needing prescription medication for mental health issues at the detention center, what kind of challenges did that create for your staff in terms of how you had to dedicate your time and areas of focus?
Well, one of the things that we incorporated into the detention center in an effort to help the mentally ill was we developed what we call the CIT unit. And actually, CIT was brought in by now retired Assistant Sheriff Ted Moody. It's a model that came from Memphis on crisis intervention training. We provided crisis intervention training to a number of our officers at the time, also in the detention center, and actually developed one entire module that was dedicated to mentally ill people that were on psychotropic meds, that were stable, and we had a crisis intervention officer that had been trained or on each shift working in those modules, trying to ensure that they used the right interactions and understood decompensation when somebody was having a problem, might need to be on some kind of medication, be seen by the psychiatrist. As well as we worked very closely with the medical company that was in there in providing groups and some individual counseling with them as well, so that we were trying to give them the best care and treatment that we possibly could while they were in custody. And I have to say that I believe, although I don't know for sure, but I believe that they have continued that model. I know that Captain Frank Regan is exceptionally dedicated to the mentally ill. He runs a coalition for the mentally ill and works with a number of people in the community that work with mental health facilities, as well as he's on the board of directors for NAMI. Mm-hmm. So he has a lot of interest in helping and maintaining the best that they can the mentally ill population that are in the detention center.
All right. You're listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Today, we're talking about mental health care in Nevada, in Las Vegas. And our guest is Marilyn Rogan, a former Metro Police captain and the operator of Adams House, a mental health residential treatment facility here in Vegas. Marilyn, we were talking about the detention center. I was wondering if you think there's a need for more diversion programs. We talked about the mental health courts before, but should more offenders, maybe nonviolent offenders, being steered away from the detention center, maybe put into more different facilities?
Well, you know, some of the things, like I said, that Assistant Sheriff Moody worked with in getting the CIT officers trained was when a person that was mentally ill or was known to be mentally ill, rather than arresting them, bringing them to the hospital or to an emergency room, getting them legal 2000 so that they could hopefully get stabilized on their medications rather than cycling back through the jail. Mm-hmm. But do I feel that there should be a more programs like what we have started with Adams House in the community? Absolutely. I think that a mentally ill person definitely responds better to a therapeutic environment and an environment where people are monitoring and ensuring that they're taking the medication and there's consistency and structure. I think that they function much better and they have their own little community and family when they're in a program like Adams House. And they're happier. We're keeping them out of the hospitals. they're not getting, you know, arrested, but they're becoming and living productive lives and becoming happier people, treated with dignity and respect. And that's what all mentally ill people deserve, is to be treated with dignity and respect and be a part of the community as best they can.
All right, Marilyn, I've heard you sort of reiterate that point several times now, and that with the opening of Adam's House, and of course that perhaps will give your son Adam's life, as you said, a little more meaning. He died, unfortunately, just over a year ago, and had been mentally ill. And do you believe, though, that are we doing enough? Are we doing enough as a society to help those who are mentally ill be at the most productive state that they can be? Or is that something we're doing a good job at? Are we failing? How are we doing?
I think that those people that are working in the field are doing the best they can with the resources that they have. However, I think that the community as a whole needs to be better educated. I think that some of the law enforcement need to be better educated. I think some of the, you know, everybody, the legal professions, all of it need to be better educated in what mental illness truly is and what kind of support they need. And I think that programs and organizations like NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, is trying very hard at doing things like that. I think that retired Assistant Sheriff Moody did an incredible job with trying to bring that to the police department and educate the police officers that interact with mentally ill people on a daily basis, you know, more education in how to interact and treat and show them respect and dignity, as well as in the jail system. But I think there is more that can be done. I think that more people need to be educated in the aspects of mental illness, so that people do feel that they're respected and that they have dignity and worth and value, and that they're not that crazy person walking down the street. Nobody wants to be called names or be stigmatized. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what happens in a community that doesn't understand and that doesn't have the education to understand what mental illness is. And like we spoke before, this state, the last I checked now, I can't say that I've checked recently, but had a D rating in mental illness care. Now, that doesn't speak well for the state, in my opinion, because, like I said, if you had a child that was suffering from cancer, and that's a disease just like mental illness, would you want your child getting a D-rated care if they had cancer? Would you want people making fun of your child because they had cancer? Would you want them to disrespect your child, make fun of them because maybe they were bald from having chemo? No, you expect them to be educated and be compassionate and treat them with respect and dignity. Well, I think everybody who has a child or a family member who's mentally ill wants the same for their child. It wants the same for their family member. They want them to have the respect that they deserve. They're human beings, and they're a part of this community, and they deserve to be treated that way, with dignity and respect, not labeled, stigmatized, and referred to as you know, that crazy wacko walking down the street, or look at this person, or pointing. Nobody wants that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, Marilyn, you mentioned the RD rating, and the, I think what we've seen in this issue with Ross and Neil is that there's a need for more funding. And now I was wondering if you see this as a cultural issue for Nevada, in terms of, we also get very poor ratings for our education system, very poor ratings for our other healthcare issues other than mental health care, basically anything that's publicly funded. So is this an issue that where you see that we need a cultural shift where people are willing to put more of their tax dollars into mental health care and healthcare in general, or should someone else be footing the bill?
Well, I think that my belief is that a lot of it is the state's responsibility in helping people that don't have any other resources. Many of the mentally ill people can't work. They don't have the mental capacity to work. What are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to live out on the street? Are they supposed to add to the homeless population? And ultimately, if they aren't providing assistance and monies for these programs to help the mentally ill, they're ultimately spending it in the, you know, in the jails and the prisons. And the last I knew, again, back 4 years ago when I was working at the jail, it cost $115 approximately a day to house a person, you know, a jail bed day. Well, I mean, you can do the math for that, and how many thousands of dollars is that at the end of a month to take care of somebody that's in a jail or in a prison? And I think that the monies could be spent much better and maybe in enhancing the numbers of people that can be part of the mental health court program, giving them more funding, providing more monies and grants to residential treatment programs, and helping the mentally ill people. That, you know, I don't know anybody that, or I guess there are a few people that choose to be homeless, but I don't know anybody that would prefer to be homeless and hungry and not have their, you know, the opportunity to take the medication. But some of these people don't even have that opportunity because they don't have any funding. And when you talk about disability, if they don't have any support system, they don't have anybody that can help them fill out paperwork to get disability so that they could probably or perhaps get some housing. But with the monies that they get from disability, that the kind of housing that they get are in areas that, you know, aren't, although it's a home, and I've got to say that that's wonderful, but some of the areas that they would be able to live are the housing areas that probably have a higher rate of drug abuse in them. And that's certainly not what a mentally ill person needs, is to live in that kind of environment. They've already got enough struggles as it is. But if they have to have some kind of help, and we need that kind of backing for the mentally ill to get the medications that they need and the support that they need. And I've got to say that the state needs that help as well. They're helping these homeless people. And if you keep getting your budget cut, how in the world can you help all the people that are walking around homeless and mentally ill that don't have housing if you don't have the money to try to help them? And so what does that do? It just brings them back into the jails. And again, the county is picking up the funding for that, or the state, and which is the most beneficial to the mentally ill person. What is the best for the taxpayer as far as the amount of money that have to be spent? And what's ultimately, which we should be most concerned with, is the mentally ill person who's ill and needs help. What is ultimately the best for them so that they can come back into the community and be productive and actually help the tax-paying people?
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Marilyn. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope that this gets out to people how much that we need to help the mentally ill people out there, and that if there's anybody that is mentally ill and needs services and we can help them in any way, that we'd be glad to help whomever we could in any way we can live a better life with respect and dignity. That's our whole purpose.
Great. All right. Well, Marilyn Rogan runs Adams House, and you've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Our producer is Steven Zeller. For my co-host Andrew Doman, I'm Tobin LePan. Tune in next week.